Sitting in a nondescript warehouse in Richmond, California, is a whole bank of machines, including one very powerful one. And that very powerful machine acts like a dozen other not-so-powerful machines. And one of those not-so-powerful machines that doesn't exist, but is incredibly important to my life, calls itself the Fortress of Solitude. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Jeff Atwood, Daniel Boyd, William Hearn, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. The Internet Archive has something that is becoming rarer and rarer: open uploads, the ability of anyone with an account to upload anything they want. Whether it stays around, and whether or not anyone can see it, that's a whole other matter. But we do, in principle, allow people to decide to upload something whenever they want to, however they want to, and in almost any form they wish. To do this, just go to archive.org/upload and follow the directions. And people do. We get thousands of uploads a day. I did a little bit of research and discovered that 3,500 pieces come in every day on average. And that's all of the ones that are in the open collections. That doesn't count the tens of thousands of items with our partners and other institutions that we have made arrangements with. And while this is encouraging, we do have people who want to upload one thing or one kind of thing, and it is very large, very hard to deal with, and they don't really want to learn how they're going to make it work within the Internet Archive system. What they often do is contact me. And I love those mails, because somebody is coming to us with something that matters to them, that they know the world will want, and they just need a little bit of assistance. People have come to me asking if we can take on hundreds of gigabytes of sporting events, or thousands of individual scanned newsletters. Maybe they want to give me a whole bunch of ripped VHS tapes from titles and obscurities long past any kind of commercial date or even relative interest. People who want to give me scanned menus or send me PDFs from a collection that they've been maintaining. Recently, I had somebody who wanted to give me gigabytes and gigabytes of everything associated with the manufacture, patents, and correspondence of the Bally Astrocade system. In all of these cases, folks want to work with the archive, but ramping up from zero to uploading hundreds or thousands of items and trying to learn how best to upload and what their practices should be, it's going to make them procrastinate. And I am not a fan of procrastination. I've seen too many projects that I deal with, people who are really earnest and want things to happen, but they put it aside, waiting for that moment when it's going to all be perfect, when they'll have it all arranged just so and turn that into a pristine collection that the world will admire and make maximum use from the minute it shows up. That collection doesn't exist. I am a pretty hardcore incrementalist. I don't like it when things come in as one big uniform slab, never to be touched again, with some sort of impression that it came out perfectly the first try. I like it much more when somebody gives us pieces and they lack certain aspects, but those can be improved upon, especially as folks who perhaps didn't even know that this stuff existed do research and add to it. We've had so many cases where somebody will upload a magazine or maybe a comic book, and then somebody in the comments will make some sort of contextual statement that is nowhere to be found in the magazine itself, that maybe this was the last issue before the magazine went bankrupt, or here's an issue that has a star or person under a different name, and we would know them another way, but here they are appearing on page 34 in a way you didn't even expect. That comes from time, but it means it has to be up there for everybody as soon as possible. Some years ago, I had requested a virtual server because I knew we didn't have a physical one for me that would allow me space and bandwidth to do the job that I needed to be doing with people's data instead of having them sit around and figure out how are they going to process these large files or large collections. Let me do it. I'll do it for you. Don't worry about it. Since for most of these people, this was something they were doing on the side or for one particular job, but this was all I was doing day in, day out, we'd end up with better collections on the archive, and more importantly, collections that everyone could enjoy immediately. Thus, we ended up with a machine, which we named Fortress of Solitude. Fast forward 5 or 6 years, and Fortress of Solitude is the world's most bizarre intergalactic depot of data. In the time it will take you to listen to this podcast episode, Fortress of Solitude will transfer somewhere between 50 and 200 gigabytes of data. Here's the kind of projects that I know are going through Fortress of Solitude as I record this. All 2018 recordings of the Professional Darts Association. 40 years of digitized newsletters from a radio enthusiast group in Britain. 540,000 MP3 tracks taken from MySpace between 2007 and 2010. 300 images of CD-ROMs and DVD-ROMs, operating systems, shareware, and program files. 50 to 100 VHS tapes. Essentially, the entire history of DOS games, and somewhere between 2 or 3,000 websites captured by ArchiveBot, a project deserving of an entire other episode. So it's a busy place. And over the last 5 or 6 years of Fortress of Solitude, I've also had to create a bunch of custom tools that all interact with the Internet Archive and allow me to do things at a rate much greater than any single person could do. I have programs that look through keywords or shore up whether or not a PDF is working. I've got programs that look over a whole bunch of files, find out whether or not they're the same file or variations of the same file, and make decisions based on that. I've got programs that look through and generate metadata or take away metadata as needed if it's turning out to be redundant or wrong. And this machine is doing all of this insanity 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, without stop, without fail, and is responsible, easily, for hundreds of terabytes of material on the archive. I think if somebody looked over my shoulder in a regular workday, they would be really surprised at how little of my day-to-day job involves me actually going to an archive.org site. A lot of it is opening up 14 or 15 windows, all connected to the Fortress of Solitude, and manipulating things on the archive using scripts and tools and getting feedback. Monitoring the files that are going by at any given time. Double-checking that the BitSavers collection or the DNA Lounge collection is automatically updating itself like it's supposed to. The Fortress of Solitude is where it gets done. Now, let's pull back a moment and talk about the context of all this, because the Fortress of Solitude is a symptom. The disease is the need to make things go online. When I interact with people who let me know about collections, especially ones that are made of paper or videotapes or discs that are sitting somewhere, everybody, it seems like, has a kind of vision in their head about these things must go online. It's so inherent in people that a lot of times they don't even feel a need to tell me. They will point out that there's a pile of magazines, and the implied action is that, of course, it's all going to end up online. The archive has done an excellent, excellent job of convincing people that that's what it does. You bring in a whole bunch of stuff, and it becomes bits and data, and you will be able to interact with it. And frankly, in a lot of cases, that's pretty accurate. If something is born digital And there are a lot of born digital items out there, things where something where a place is generating nothing but PDF files, or somebody has converted MIDI files into WAV files, into MP3 files, into whatever else. Well, it's pretty easy to put that stuff up into the hard drives of the archive. We're just another place to store them, albeit one with a pretty good web address. But the other side of that coin is the more involved it is to turn something digital, the less likely it is that it's going to happen in any amount of time that a person would consider reasonable. If you hand me 1,000 PDFs, I can have those things on the Internet Archive in individual items with optical character recognition within a couple hours. But if you hand me a Saddle Stitch catalog, no matter how interesting it is, it's probably going to be days or weeks or even months, depending on what's ahead of it, because it takes time. A person has to put this item into a machine, make sure that it's aligned, scan it, make sure the color looks right, make sure that it wasn't cut off on the edges, then turn it into a bunch of files, compare those images to the original, and then turn it all into some sort of format, which can then be processed by a place like the archive into a readable form, so that it can be found in search, or playable on a Kindle, or whatever else we want to do with it. It's a process. I don't feel like we've done as good a job really making it clear that that's the case. Professional archivists and librarians laugh at hearing me talk like this. These are all known factors, and it's considered a part of the job to make this clear to people when they make donations as to what the nature of their donation will be. That some of it might not be used, that it might be sold, that it might sit around, that it might never see the light of day. So much of what we do with the archive gets done so quickly and at such a speed and rate that I think sometimes folks forget we're just another institution. We have our priorities and our ups and our downs in terms of dealing with different types of material. So for this last year, I've been pretty focused on clearing up two main branches. One of them is pushing through any extant digital projects, anything that had files online that just needed an action to be taken. I've been working very hard to make sure that they are done, that they're not sitting in some sort of temporary section, that they're not waiting for somebody to run a command, that they all are up on the archive or compressed down into a file and then also uploaded to the archive in the state that they are. The other main branch is clearing up and making sure that there are projects that are marked as never going to be started, or that will not be started for a long time, and to document them as so. Fundamental to all of this is the Fortress of Solitude. My little virtual instance has 11 terabytes of disk space. Of that 11 terabytes, probably 200 to 300 gigabytes is what you might call bedrock. There's not much I can do about them. They are backups of other servers that I run. They are the scripts that I've written. They are data files that are checked against by the scripts. They are, in other words, not going anywhere. They can also be considered to be vaguely disposable. If I no longer use the system because of health or other concerns, and somebody came in, I would like to think that they could wipe the disk and not lose anything. I don't know how many of my tools would have direct use to other people, and how many of them are personal one-offs that don't really have any other meaning. Whether or not somebody would do that, well, we'll just have to see. But those other roughly 10 terabytes, well, it's constantly growing and shrinking. I'll see it swell up to 70% full, then drop down again to 10%. Recently, I took in a pretty fun historical collection, the Ultimate Tape Archive, which is a Commodore 64 compilation of cassettes that were used to provide games and programs off of cassette drives. This used to happen. If it sounds like they might be slow, oh my God, are they slow. You would put in a cassette tape, press play, and the system would read from the cassette tape, and it would take minutes. You would plug in your game, your action program, and frankly, you could walk down to the local store, get yourself some sort of beverage, walk back, and the program would probably be ready for you. So it turns out a group has been digitizing these tapes, also digitizing the cassette tapes themselves, and the cassette inlay. It's possible to look over the visual components of cassette tapes that were available in the 1980s, as well as play the programs that were on them. And it all only weighs in at a few gigabytes. Often one section of the Fortress of Solitude's warehouse was the uploading of all of these cassettes into individual items, and then having me run other custom programs to look at the items themselves to make them work in our emulation system, and to set up any metadata that could be pulled from the tapes. After that, I reached out to one of my secret weapons, Duncan the Metadata Machine, who's a guy who, well, he loves metadata. He's so good at it that I almost hesitate to use him because it's like calling in the wolf. I depend on folks like this all the time. Duncan, if I give him a list of 600 items and say, could you tell me the Moby Games component for each of these tapes, he's usually got it back to me the next morning, which is exactly what he did. Then I ran another script created by another volunteer named Trumad that looked through all of the Moby Games entries, pulled out the individual metadata related to that program, and put them into the item on the archive. So, even in that simple project, you have the group of enthusiasts who put together the tapes, you've got Crazy Jason pulling in the data and getting it up to the archive, you've got the metadata machine, Duncan, and then you've got the additional script written by Trumad, which made it all look great. The result, the Ultimate Tape Archive Collection, looks beautiful, runs beautiful, and is filled with information that people could use to relive the experience of running a Commodore 64 with a cassette drive. Now, how many people will do this? Well, that's not today's question to be answered. But I will tell you, none of it would be possible if the Fortress of Solitude was, in fact, a Fortress of Solitude. It's the collaboration of dozens, probably hundreds of people, both uploading files, contributing scripts, and double-checking the work to ensure that it all flows as good as it can. So I think that's the real secret, working together to be able to take the digital world and put it onto the archive for everyone to enjoy. That makes it the wonderful thing that it is. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bekoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Adam Green, and Forrest Fuqua, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere, who are helping me get out of debt. Last week, I submitted all of my deductions to my accountant, Rich, and we'll see what comes out the other end. How much I owe in terms of taxes related to income from the podcast to pay off previous years, well, that's going to be a very, very interesting outcome. The resulting number is going to tell me whether or not I'm on some sort of weird financial treadmill where the income to pay off my taxes is causing me to incur more taxes that I then have to raise money to pay. I don't know. I like this problem, however. I like what people have done for me, which is that everything has become a simple number with the IRS. It has been pretty nice, frankly, to wake up and concentrate on knowing what projects need my attention and who I promised what to and what to get back to them, and to not lose any time worried about this particular debt versus that one, or what I was going to have to defer on to get payments to the IRS on time. Right now, I am focused almost 100% on getting things done. I will continue to owe the IRS, I am sure, for some time to come, just the normal process of being a taxpayer. But I'm not somebody who is looking at years-long debt with the government trying to figure out what I was going to shortchange to make myself not have to owe them as much. You've helped me do that. I really appreciate it. I have never forgotten that. Thank you so much for continuing to support me and this podcast.